Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for March 22nd, 2015. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello.
And welcome Tim Chiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yeah, well, tonight got a bunch of shows, got a bunch of topics because things have been kind of stacking up on us. We loved having Lachlan McIntosh last week. But this week we don't have a guest for any certain state or anything. It's just going to be the three of us covering a lot of different things we've been wanting to talk about. And one of the first one of those is there was a poll late last week. It came out before last week's show, but not much before. We just didn't get to it. Out of Kentucky, Bluegrass poll. They, up in Kentucky, the two major cities, they do a pretty good job. They work together, the Lexington paper and the Louisville paper. Work together and commission a poll. You know, 640 people are polled on this thing. I mean, that's pretty good. Actually, that's of the Democrats. I think the actual poll, I'm trying to find the crosstabs, maybe over 1,000, just a huge universe. I mean, really probably much bigger than you statistically have to have for a state the size of Kentucky, actually, because it says a poll of 640 Democrats. You know, because they polled the Democratic primary, the Republican primary, and then the general election. And I was really just pleasantly surprised at the outcome. You have Attorney General Jack Conway, who is leading all four Republican challengers. It's 40%, but his smallest lead is 2%. But he leads some of those guys by even more. Tim, are you kind of surprised at a state like Kentucky the Democrats can still elect folks at the top of the state level, even though the federal picture is so bleak there?
Well, no, for some reason they're kind of frozen in time in their Georgia of 20 years ago and some other southern states like Arkansas and North Carolina and back then Florida that did things like that. Conway is well known. Heiner over on the Republican side, Hal Heiner, is leading those polls probably because he spent more money so far than all the other candidates combined. He's from over in the Louisville area too, which is, you know, a big metro area. But I'm pretty stoked about it. By the way, that total sample was over 2,200 adults.
Gigantic.
640 were Democrats, 530 or something like that were Republican, and the rest were independent voters. So I'm pretty stoked about it. I'm happy, with a good Democrat in the governor's office now who has been very popular, you know, that should help. So
Steve Beshears did a good job of remaining popular in Kentucky while still, you know, doing things like putting together a popular and successful state statewide health care campaign. Catherine, 2,200 people, you can, I know they'll do national polls with about 1,200, and you look at the diversity. I mean, Kentucky's not – there is some diversity in Kentucky, but it's not as diverse as a lot of states because that, you know, the more diversity you have, the more respondents you need to really get an accurate picture. That's a lot of phone calls. What'd you make of the poll?
Yeah, well, I thought it was encouraging. I think, you know, to be fair, I think name recognition probably played a pretty big role in Conway's success because, you know, people know who he is. But still, he is a Democrat, and so it's encouraging. Those numbers are encouraging, and It'd be nice to see it roll into the federal general election, but that remains to be seen, of course. I think it'll depend on who our nominee is and who the nominee on the other side is. But those are encouraging numbers nonetheless.
Yeah, I know in 2008, you know, the argument was made that a candidate like Hillary Clinton would do better in a state like Kentucky. I mean, it was specifically, I believe, said at times, you know, states like Kentucky. And obviously, I mean, that's where a state where the president did have trouble in. And so I wonder, this will be the chance in 2016 to bear that theory out. Although 8 years is such a long time, and people change on issues and everything else. But, you know, we'll get to see that in the next two elections, because obviously they have the odd year elections for governor. So it's one of the things coming up sooner than later. And then you have, you know, just 2 years. It's coming so quickly. The national election. Well, we'll continue to follow these bluegrass polls if they do more. And maybe they'll listen to our show and for some reason figure out why they have to call so many folks. But I guess, you know, the margin of error should have been about 2% on that thing. I didn't see it. Did you see it, Tim?
Yeah, it was 2.2.
Yeah, 2.2. I was just looking at it.
Really
and,
low.
They kind of blended this poll too, David. They tried every one they could on a home phone, on the landline. And if they couldn't reach them on a home phone, then they sent them like this questionnaire on their smartphone or, you know, their tablet or something like that. So they reached a lot of people.
Sounds like me when I want to get something done. I'll annoy you to death. I guess folks think my paper or think like me, man, they'll do what they got to do to get a hold of you. As y'all know, when I try to book guests, that's sometimes I'll do. I'll reach them three different ways if I have to and keep on. Well, we know I mentioned the presidential work, so let's go ahead and move on to that. And there was a real interesting article. There's a lot of presidential stuff this week. But a real interesting article saying, you know, everybody's saying, oh, the Democrats don't have a bench. I mean, if it's Hillary Clinton or nobody, I mean, who in the world would run? And I think it was Vox Populi, which I believe has Ezra Klein, longtime Washington Post reporter, started Vox Populi. You know, he talked about Al Gore. You know, people don't talk and think a lot about Al Gore as much in presidential terms, but he's still so popular in Democratic circles, and he obviously has a national profile. I think a lot of folks, probably there's a lot of folks, I think some ways might have, that not did not vote for him in 2000, respect him more now for some reason. I get that sense. I mean, once again, I guess we need more polling. But, Catherine, if for some reason, and I don't think it's going to happen, but if for some reason Hillary Clinton didn't run, does Al Gore become the Democrats' bench for president?
I love Al Gore, and I was devastated when he lost or when he wasn't made president.
Yeah.
I just think his ship has sailed. I mean, I hate to say that, but I just worry about, I mean, I think they pointed out in that article some of the pitfalls, the fact that he is very wealthy and, you know, he's a, you know, jet flying, mansion living environmentalist, and I think he would have to answer to that, and it wouldn't be easy to answer to some of those accusations. I mean, I don't believe that's a problem, but I think it would be something that he would have to answer to. And I also think that you know, his personal life has been a little bit complicated with his divorce, and I don't know. I mean, I love the guy, and if I thought that there was a chance that a campaign like that could work, I would be encouraged by it. But he's not a very good candidate. He's kind of dull, and I don't know. I mean, I would certainly get behind him if he was selected, and I think a lot of people would. But I think it would be a uphill battle to elect him president.
Yeah, Tim, I thought Catherine was going to say a jet flying, wheeling, dealing, kiss stealing, you know, what's the old line? But she just talked about him, his wealth. I think they pointed out somewhere that he's now more wealthy than Mitt Romney. I guess he's now the measuring stick. Well, this will be the first campaign that he's run without Tipper Gore. Tim, what do you think about if, and that's this huge, major, giant, three-dimensional if, Hillary Clinton didn't run, would Al Gore be next man up?
No, he won't. He has already indicated a few days ago through, shall we say, some of his associates that he really doesn't have much interest in doing this. So I would be stunned if he did. I know Klein talked about things like, oh, the pressing issue of the day, climate change. Well, it is. It's important. I mean, it is possibly the most pressing and urgent problem of the day. Unfortunately, it's not going to be a cutting issue in the voting booth. That's
right.
Not going to propel Al Gore to the presidency. I hate to throw this out there, but I've seen Al Gore run before. he should have easily won that 2000 race, in my opinion. So I just don't think there's any way, David. He's known by a lot of the newer voters for other things now, and you mean Al Gore, the climate guy, is running? You know, so a lot of people don't know his political history. Now, I don't think there's any way in this world. I'm still on the Hillary or bust kick, you know, but that's me.
Yeah, and like I said, I just think that's such a remote chance she doesn't run. But then you have to ask the question, she ran and lost, and he ran and lost. So I don't know. I mean, we're kind of saying with devil's advocate.
Well, she didn't run for president and lose.
She
ran for the
nomination.
I mean, she ran for in the primary and lost. That's a little bit different than actually running for president and losing.
Well, I mean, that way you could argue that she did worse because she didn't get the nomination. Now, obviously, the field she ran against was much tougher than just Bill Bradley. She had, you know, President Obama. She had John Edwards. She had Joe Biden. She had Christopher Dodd. I mean, it was a much fuller field, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, he did get a step further in the race than she did. I mean, like I said, I'm playing devil's advocate.
There's just too much going for her that would not be going for him. For instance, that little matter of making history. That's a compelling reason for a lot of people to vote for her. A lot of people would like to be a part of that history, right?
Oh, yep. Yes. And I think one of the most important people in this whole thing is, I think this is only if she doesn't want to run that Al Gore looks at it anyway. But if, let's just say, he started saying he wanted to look at it, I think President Obama does feel some guilt that he kept the first woman from being president. Because really, I said it way back in 2008, John McCain finished third for president. Won the nomination. She'd have beat him. So, I mean, I do think he feels some guilt because he's, you know, everyone around him, other than his grandfather, is seemingly female. And so I think he gets the problem there.
A couple of his people, a couple of his senior people that worked in his campaign have gone to Iowa, you know, to set up shop for her. I don't think that's any accident. I don't think she just picked them out of the thin air. I think that's part of him maybe reaching out and, you know, paying her back. I do.
Oh, Jeff.
I think he, although he'll never say it in a million years, I think the president is going to be for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. Well, Catherine, Tim took us to Iowa, and we're talking about national politics, so let's stay there. There was an article you know, kind of titled Iowa's Uneasy Embrace of Hillary Clinton. I sent y'all. Why is Iowa, a state that seemingly is slower to excite Hillary Clinton as opposed to many other states in the nation? Or is this article just unfounded? Is it just like looking at 1 year too heavily? Catherine, what do you think?
I was surprised by that. I think Tim probably has a better historical perspective on this, but I was surprised. I would think that she would be very popular in Iowa. She seems to me like the perfect candidate for Iowans. So I don't know what the explanation for that is.
I mean, she's from Chicago. She's always lived in cities, and you know, Iowa's much more of a rural state. Although it seems like a very open-minded state, I don't know what their political history is with electing female candidates. I mean, we know Georgia has just an abysmal record electing female candidates, you know, on both sides of the aisle.
Well, I mean, not just the fact that she's a woman, but, you know, she's a moderate Democrat. She's not, you know, really super far to the left. She's not, you know, she's pretty, you know, I was just surprised by that. But I don't know, like, did Bill Clinton have luck in Iowa? He didn't, right?
No.
He didn't. Tom Harkin ran that year.
So are Harkin and Clinton rival? I mean, are they buddies or not?
Well, no, that year, that was in 1992. Tom Harkin, when he announced he was running for president, Iowa just got skipped over, and the race moved directly to New Hampshire for all intents and purposes.
Okay.
So that meant that President Clinton and Hillary Clinton never got a chance to really, you know, develop roots there. I will say that. Tim, go your butt.
Yeah, historically, the Clintons have not done well there, even though pretty much Clinton had the field to himself. Bill Clinton finished like a very distant fourth there.
Right.
And therefore, you know, he had to do the comeback kid thing in New Hampshire.
Right, right, right.
And of course, Hillary, frankly, Obama's campaign just run her down and beat her there. The Iowa politics is kind of a folksy type thing. You know, let's go to the cattle show, and let's eat the fried stuff, and let's go here and there and yonder. It's not as one-on-one personal as New Hampshire, but it's a folksy type thing where you stand in front of hay bales and a tractor and a flannel shirt, and that's just not quite Hillary Clinton's thing. She really needs to get out there, though, because, and this article mentioned that, without major competition for the nomination, she has the field clear where she could essentially just get out of her car and walk around that state and just talk to groups of people on a personal level.
Yeah.
And she can do that when she wants to. You saw her do that skillfully in New Hampshire. And she won it as a result. She's got some work to do in Iowa, though. That state will be pretty close on election day. And that's what she's got to look ahead to. That's why she's got to develop some roots there now. And that's why those people have already gone there to set things up for her. Now she needs to get there. Don't you think so, David?
Yeah, and I think you're right. The nomination process, it's not going to be what it was in many other years, but Iowa is kind of a fringe swing state. I mean, we've won it every time, but it's kind of in play. It's not in a done deal kind of thing. And obviously the way the Republicans are maneuvering, if they're even successful in just one state like Michigan or just Pennsylvania, they can do this division of electoral states. You know, Democratic Party won't be able to take any state for granted because the election could get closer if you can take, you know, Michigan's 15 electoral votes and the Republicans win 9 of them. and then the Democrats win less than a majority of them, even if they win a majority of the votes. And that's a whole other topic I'd love to, you know, get into sometime. But I know that's why a state with what roughly six electoral votes like Iowa becomes, you know, more important.
Well, you got to remember that in 2004, Bush won Iowa. You know, so it's just not a given.
Right. So she needs to, she needs to do some work there, and she should have time to do it. I mean, you know, it's not like she's got a huge slate of people she's running against. She should be able to comfortably, you know, saunter into Iowa with some organization behind her and, you know, make you know, win friends and influence people pretty easily.
Yeah, well, let's use this time. We did a pecking order of the Republican field, and that was much more important, if you will, because there's so many more viable options. But then, of course, there are more people than Hillary Clinton that are running for the nomination. Now, how good a chance they have is very debatable. But looking at the rest of that field, I guess Martin O'Malley, Jim Webb, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren. Would y'all put anybody else into the possible field? Now, I know if Hillary Clinton didn't run, you'd definitely have some more folks, but is there anybody else that might jump in this thing that y'all could see besides those four? Not that all four of those would with Hillary Clinton in.
Maybe Bernie Sanders, but he might not run as a Democrat. You know?
That's a good point. Yeah, might not even be a Democrat if he runs. Well, that, if we kind of agree, that's kind of the field, if you will. What's your thoughts, Catherine? Which one of those has the best chance to be the other candidate that may run around Iowa and do better on caucus day than one would expect?
Probably Martin O'Malley.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is that he's a hard worker, and I think he understands that kind of politics. Not that the others don't, but I think he's probably better at it. I don't know that much about Jim Webb. I don't think Joe Biden's going to run. Joe Biden can't really go to Iowa without being a, you know, it's going to be a, I mean, he can go there, but it becomes a big deal when the vice president shows up, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't be quite as,
He can't go be a
as
judge
casual.
At the Corn Queen pageant in Ames, you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, he can, but it's not quite the same sort of folksy kind of thing because you got, you know, 5 million Secret Service people and, you know, all the pomp and circumstance of him being the vice president. So I think it just makes it hard, right? I mean, it's not that he can't do it, but I think it's a different kind of campaigning. Don't you think?
Yes. I do. Tim, what's your thoughts on that field?
You know what I was wondering? If Hillary Clinton, through some miracle, and I think it would be a miracle now, does not run, would the vice president be the person who would inherit President Obama's campaign operation? Because if anyone inherited that, boy, you could take some big steps toward the nomination. Just a thought.
I think you're right. And obviously, since they picked him, he was loyal to them. They'd have to have some loyalty to him. I mean, but then you could see somebody breaking off and kind of being renegade as well if it opens up. One person you mentioned, obviously, if Elizabeth Warren, if Hillary Clinton doesn't run, then we're going to would like to see a female. Elizabeth Warren kind of is very much a darling of the left of the party and would pick up that mantle. But some people have said she's kind of too angry to be president, that she needs to have a sunnier way about going about her issues. I mean, and you can pick other females like Kristen Gillibrand that do that better. Is this, I don't know if y'all read the same stories I have about the people have criticized how angry she is about things, or seems that way. It comes off that way. Catherine, have you seen those articles, and will it matter?
I've seen those, but I of all the, you know, top 1,000 words that come to mind when I think of Elizabeth Warren, angry is not one of them. She just doesn't strike me that way. She's critical, but not, she doesn't seem, and maybe I just, you know, I'm biased or something. She doesn't seem angry to me. I think she's maybe pragmatic, more pragmatic and less, not optimistic, but less, I don't think she buys the American exceptionalism as much as a lot of people in politics do. So maybe that's what they're talking about. I don't know. It doesn't ring true for me. She just doesn't seem angry.
You know, angry is not the right word. Indignant is the right word.
Yeah, okay.
And
I'll take
it. That myself, by the way. So,
yeah, but we're not running for president. At least I'm not. I don't know if you are. But.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jump in there, David. Well, that's what I'm saying, Tim. I was going to throw to you, but you kind of, and that's good. So you think that it's the wrong choice of word.
Well, I don't think she don't. I'm with Catherine. She don't strike me as angry. She strikes me as an indignant progressive. That says, look, we're great. We can do a whole lot better.
Yeah.
And the government, you know, can be used as an effective tool to do that, which a lot of centrists would not like to hear right now. I would enjoy it, but I'm not sure she'd be presidential timbered this time. You know, it's another thing to think about here, guys. If for some reason Hillary Clinton did not run, well, then we got to start thinking about there's going to be some people step forward into that vacuum that no one has even thought about. Because
right,
people
there.
Are staying away and not even looking at it because of her.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. And, of course, you got, I think, you know, just some rising names because a lot of the bench is older. I mean, you know, Andrew Cuomo seems like one of the younger names on the Democratic bench because we have lost a decent number of races and in recent years, and folks that have come in hadn't created the same national profile. So it'd be interesting to see. Talk about all these names. Now, I did see something that there are possibly a record number of candidates on the GOP side. 20 candidates may join up. You know, on the Democratic side, you could have one, you could have, you know, five or six if something happens a certain way. And then CNN released some type of video called Too Many Cooks, and it was a very annoying song that went on way too long. It looked like a early 80s sitcom, but they found these some very unflattering pictures of some candidates and not of others. But the question I have for y'all is when exactly did CNN try to do, you know, SNL news or the Comedy Central, you know, work? I thought they were a serious news organization. Did something change?
I didn't have time to watch that, so I can't really comment.
Yeah, you'll never get your 6 minutes back of your life anyway. Tim, did you watch that thing?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Or 2 minutes and then get bored and click it off?
No, I sat through the whole thing. I had to almost strangle my own self in order to do it, but it was not good. It was kind of lame, I thought. It wasn't funny at all. What was that with the sheep there at the end of it? What was that all about? And why were they showing dictators and just bizarre things? It that's not, you're right, that's not CNN's thing. That's not what
do. Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to do it, and that's debatable itself, cut the darn thing to 2 minutes and then just go through the announced presidential candidates on particularly the Republican side, because that's your point, is how many people on the Republican side.
Uh-huh.
And it would have been mildly tolerable, still off the message, but, you know, then when they met, six-some-odd minutes, and they, anybody that was even remotely political, they, you know, showed them, and then the sheep, and it really, it definitely jumped the shark, and that's a six-minute, I guess, more of a YouTube video or online. I have to think they weren't leading the top of the hour's headline news with that. So that was just for folks to click on to, you know, get more ads, if you will. I guess, is there a attempt
yeah,
at viral marketing?
They could name most 20 people or whatever at 3 minutes and move on.
Now, I said two. You're even giving them an extra minute. So
yeah, I'm going to give them an extra minute. They might show one or two extra pictures of a, I don't know, an interesting guy like Ben Carson or something who's actually done something in his life.
Yeah, a few of the pictures were, they did catch some, I guess, were mildly amusing. That was the only thing, funny parts of that thing might have been if they caught a picture that was a little bit funny. One person I don't remember seeing in the video, although there were so many faces, I think it would be a memory test if you could get everybody to name everything they saw in that video. But I don't remember seeing Mitt Romney. Was he in that thing, Tim?
Yeah, he was in it. His picture
he
was
made
in
it,
there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you the next one, Tim. I didn't remember Mitt. I certainly didn't remember Evander Holyfield. So help out here. Evander Holyfield, he didn't make it, did he?
No, he wasn't on there, although he's been quite in the news lately, hasn't he?
Well, yes, and that's my next topic. Mitt Romney and Evander Holyfield are, you know, Mitt Romney said he's not going to run for president in 2016. I definitely think that was the best move. Definitely been there, done that with Mitt Romney, having run twice in a row. Didn't win the nomination one time, won the nomination the next time. He's definitely, you know, argument earlier with Al Gore, Hillary Clinton, he checks both boxes because he's done it each way. And so definitely it seems like he's had his time. And but now he's wanting to enter the ring. I think this would be more ill-advised than him running for president. He's going to enter the ring and fight Evander Holyfield. It's for charity, and I think that's great that it's for charity vision. They're providing health care to people with vision problems around the world. I just think it's wonderful that they're raising all this money, but it's obviously a shame. I mean, if Evander Holyfield went to box a non-boxer, a non, you know, top-class athlete, he could hurt them, seriously. So, therefore, he's going to have to hold back. So, what in the world is this sham about, Catherine?
It's about raising money for charity. And I don't know. I don't know what Mitt Romney has in mind.
Well,
I mean, I don't know why he needs the attention if he's not running. And but, you know, apparently this is a charity that he's been involved in for a long time, and, you know, maybe he just is doing it for kicks. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, the charity part of it, I don't think we can disrespect. It's just, I do think, I mean, if they were going to go do a political debate for charity, would Mitt Romney take it easy on Evander Holyfield? Probably not, but obviously Evander Holyfield, because somebody could get hurt, has to take it easy on Mitt Romney. It seems a little
well, when was the last time Evander Holyfield fought?
It's been a little while, but obviously, now if he was fighting a 25-year-old politician, somebody younger, it might be a little different. But, I mean, he's probably close enough to in good shape that he can turn it up to fight somebody that's older than him and probably somebody the same age as him. Tim, what's your thoughts here?
Well, one reason Romney's in it, I believe this event's going to happen in Utah. Is that not right?
Oh, is it?
I think
you're right.
And obviously, if it's happening, I believe it's happening in Salt Lake. So, I mean, it'd be obvious you'd want a power name out of that state, and who better than the Mormon guy that ran for president? My second point is a little beside the point, but it's a good point. I really hope that Mitt Romney will be wearing, like, long shorts. I mean, I can't picture him getting in there with what these 1970 era basketball. That would really be ugly, wouldn't it? I mean, Mitt Romney was a little short. So that just invoked a.
Yeah, I don't like that visual, Tim.
Let's put him in leggings or something.
Yeah, well, I thought you were going to say what you wanted to fight in a shirt, and that would be all like Ric Flair in the last match
thing,
in AEW. He had a shirt on, so maybe Mitt Romney.
There's another thing. This is not without precedent here. You're not old enough to remember it, of course, but I know Catherine recalls it, and I recall it very well, when Maynard Jackson charity fought Muhammad Ali.
Oh, I don't
when
remember
Ali
that.
When Ali was the you don't remember that? Oh, yeah, no. It happened in the when Jackson was mayor and Ali was still the heavyweight champ in the
Yeah,
the
well,
70s.
I wasn't living in Atlanta then, so I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, but it was like big news around the country. Of course, you know, that was one of those deals where everybody followed Muhammad Ali everywhere he went, and, you know, Maynard Jackson just happened to be Atlanta's first African-American mayor. So, you know, it was. I forgot what the charity was for, but it was a big thing, and I think they were like at the Omni. The place was packed, of course, and news was there and all of that. So, you know, this sort of thing happens every once in a while, and they'll get out there and dance around, have a little fun and a few laughs, and that's okay. It's okay. Boy, Mitt Romney's life, though, is certainly different from what he thought it was going to be in 2012, isn't it?
Certainly so. I mean, a boxing match is not what he probably had planned 3 years ago.
No.
Or so.
No.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of get back into the political realm and the presidential race. We got at least two or three more stories on that. I say articles, stories would be better for the radio or the internet audio. Jeb Bush, the New York Times is reporting that he's got a vast effort to win Florida, that they're planning on figuring out how to win Florida for the first time, and many people might say outright, since, you know, I guess 88, 92, because obviously, you know, 2000 is such a controversial year, and I want to say President Clinton, he won Florida in 92, didn't he?
Yeah.
So it'd be like since 88. Oh, wait, I stand corrected. I mean, 2004 may have been where Kerry lost it. But, you know, Florida is this state that if the Republicans don't win it, they get in major, you know, they get behind the eight ball on electoral votes. So they're planning to try to win his home state. I believe that this may not be so much he's really thinking, oh, we've got to win Florida, win the nomination. I think they're leaking this story out because they want to use electability as this huge issue for the primary, and they want to sell Jeb Bush as, hey, he can win states that other Republicans you might like Scott Walker or Ted Cruz or Rand Paul, they can't win. Jeb can win it, and what does it matter if you get the candidate you like if that candidate loses, and then they're fighting Evander Holyfield, 2 years from now. Do y'all think this is a really concerted plan that, you know, Jeb Bush's team's working on, or is this just a story to put in to really talk about electability? Catherine?
Oh, I think this is about getting Marco Rubio out of the race.
Yeah, so you think it's
actually
more
for
the primary?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because Marco Rubio is obviously, I think I saw another article, you know, this week talking about how on paper he's maybe the best, definitely one of the best Republican candidates, but it doesn't seem to be materializing in reality. Tim, what do you think of this effort?
Well, the way things are breaking, the way things are setting themselves up in order, Florida is going to be so critical. You go to Iowa, you go to New Hampshire, and maybe to South Carolina before Florida, and you're talking about states that are not winner-take-all. They're giving out this stuff. on an apportioned basis. You've got a caucus of all things in Iowa, and you know how different New Hampshire is. But you get to Florida, and you're looking at 99 delegates right there. Winner take all. And the Bush family, we were talking about the history with the Clintons in Iowa. Well, the Bush family has a pretty good history in Florida. We know what happened in 2000. But even in 92, Bill Clinton lost Florida to Bush 41. So, you know, Florida's been pretty good to the Bushes. And I think Jeb wants to go down there and remind him of that. But that Florida, if he stumbles, you know, and he very well could in a place like Iowa where, you know, a guy like, I don't know, Mike Huckabee could go out and win. Rick Santorum, I mean, come on. You know, who gets their people out there to those caucuses? If he should stumble there, you can just about put a stranglehold on the nomination by winning Florida, because it's going to be so early in the process. What they say, something like March 15th or something, that they're going to vote early there next year. And it's just a must, and Catherine's right, not Rubio out right there. That's the place that Bush can win the nomination. I'm not sure anybody else can say I can win the nomination that night if I win Florida, but I think he could. And by the same token, I think if he doesn't win Florida that night, he would be in some just terrible trouble.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
okay,
I have
a little update here.
Go ahead.
I checked out this fight between Maynard Jackson and Muhammad Ali.
Uh-huh.
It was 1975.
Uh-huh.
For local charity, it's not specified, but the best part of it is, guess who the referee was?
Lester Maddox.
No. I was wanting to say it was somebody like Hank Aaron or somebody like that.
It was Julian Bond.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Great. There's some great pictures if you drill down and look for them. So, but it doesn't specify what the local charity was. But it was a local charity, which is kind of cool. Thank you, Muhammad Ali, for coming to town for a local charity. Anyway.
Yeah,
because so
he had his first fight, I guess, when he returned from or was released from jail in Atlanta. I think that was definitely before my time. It was 1970 or so. But then 75, by the time that was five, I probably was like 3 years old. So I've heard about it, but I do not remember.
Yeah.
I'm
old enough to remember hearing live, "I'm the King of the World" on the radio, because, you know, they'd put the fights on radio stations back then.
Yeah.
Boy, I'm old.
Yep. Well,
okay, so I just wanted a little update there.
Yeah, that's good. Back to our presidential coverage. Apparently tomorrow, Ted Cruz is going to announce his presidential bid. He'll be the first declared GOP candidate, although all these folks have an exploratory committee. This thing's definitely semantic. But I guess that constitutional question will definitely get asked if Ted Cruz, being born in Canada, even though one of his parents was an American citizen, you know, how does all that work out, will be clarified. But Ted Cruz entering the race, I mean, I think he hurts Marco Rubio some, he hurts Rand Paul some, could hurt Jeb Bush some, because everybody thinks Bush is in Texas, even though he's a Floridian Bush. Who all does Ted Cruz hurt, Tim?
Well, or who all can hurt Ted Cruz? Because I think he's got some work to do according to this polling. His best polling is like at 4 or 5% and running 6 or 7. And he needs those guys who are going for the same voters, of course, as he is to exit the race. I'm thinking Rubio and Huckabee right off the top of my head. Not necessarily Tea Partiers, but very socially conservative people. For instance, in Iowa, half of the Republican vote at the caucuses is going to be evangelical Christians. Ted Cruz has got to get those voters. Well, Mike Huckabee's going to be standing there. Rick Santorum's going to be standing there. And Rubio's going to be standing there. He's got to get rid of some of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, and then or then it's going to come down to, you know, maybe that it factor, that undefined who can actually, you know, connect with folks, and then who do they think can, you know,
well,
beat Hillary Clinton.
Well, can I ask you a question, David? How's he going to connect without any money? Because he really doesn't.
Oh, yeah, I mean, fundraising is going to be huge, and obviously Jeb Bush soaking all that up like a sponge. I agree. Fundraising is important for any candidate, but it seems like it's sometimes even more important in the Republican primary. Maybe that's because of the business sensibilities of the Republicans. You know, if you can't make money, they've been getting to question your purpose, if you will. Catherine, Ted
Cruz.
Plus,
he's gonna, he needs to get people, too, and that costs money. And you know, Bush is sucking up all the good people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the, you know, diehard Tea Partiers or evangelicals might not go to Cruz. They might wait to see if, you know, Rand Paul or Huckabee or whoever jumps in. So it might be hard for him to recruit the good people without the money and without the sort of red meat issues that the other guys have that appeal to people. So I think it's a challenge for him. However, I do think there's something about being the first person to declare. I think that people like that. You know, they say, "Oh, he's gonna go for it." So
he might get a little
bump just by being the first person to declare.
Yeah, and I think you're right about that. That it'll be that little sizzle he can use and show how serious he is. But then talk about the money. Even though I don't think anybody has a real feeling Rick Perry has a chance, Rick Perry still may kind of keep Ted Cruz from getting some of those big-name, big-money donors in Texas. Does Ted Cruz need Rick Perry to step aside, Tim?
Well, they don't like each other. You know, that's well known. I don't think Ted Cruz will step aside for anybody. I think that's just the way he is. We're talking about a guy
Rick
that Perry lied
step
his
aside
own.
For Ted Cruz.
Yeah, well, he might. He'd be more likely to step aside than Ted Cruz would. We're talking about a guy that was willing to shut the government down for 2 weeks. I mean, he defied everybody, Democrat and Republican, up there in Washington. He became a hero to a, you know, a lot of the Tea Party types. But that type really has never gotten anywhere near the nomination. Republicans like to go with favorites, and more often than not, they like to go with people from the establishment wing of the party. And this year, or next year, the two favorites are Bush and Walker. I got to think one of them two guys is going to get the nomination.
Yeah.
Or am I wrong here?
Well, you know, they were our all of us ranked them first and second, right?
Yeah.
And so are the polls. But, I mean, but so are the polls.
Well,
by
we know more
lot.
Than the polls.
But I mean, these two guys are in like 23-22%. We drop off down toward 10%. That's in the top four. And then everybody else is in single digits, mid-single digits, like Cruz. I mean, outside of this jumping out there first being a novelty, then what?
Yeah, because, you know, you got to figure that the money in Texas is going to be tied up by Bush, the Bushes, and Rick Perry, right? That Rick Perry's, you know, I'm sure got a lot of contacts to the money in Texas as well. And if he and Cruz aren't buddies, then, you know, Cruz is going to have trouble raising money in Texas, which, you know, that's okay. He can raise it in the rest of the country, but it's kind of hard. It's like, you know, people say, well, you can't even raise money in your home state. Why do you expect me to give you money here in, you know, Georgia or Kentucky or Idaho or wherever?
And you guys read the same story that I read. And a big Republican operative said, look, if Ted Cruz is nominee, he gets about a dozen states and he loses in a blowout. Don't y'all think that's probably true?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he would be so far to the right, be like Goldwater. Although this may be the guy, and I think Scott Walker may fit that bill too. I think this is one of those years, though, that Republicans may do, you know, they may, oh, we're going to show who our party really is, and they'll go far to the right and lose. But
Walker is a governor. Cruz is a senator. The senator that shut the government down, the senator that defies his party on national TV every night. Meanwhile, Scott Walker is a governor in Wisconsin saying, look at me, folks. I am getting Republican things done in a progressive state.
To me, that's why he's scarier. His agenda is just as far right-wing. And he somehow snookered the people of Wisconsin, and I don't know how. And that's why I guess I'm a little, you know, more scared, if you will, of Scott Walker.
Even if their politics are identical, he comes across to me as a far better candidate than Ted Cruz ever would. If I was going to run one of the two campaigns, give me Walker, hands down.
Oh, yeah, I agree. But you're right, David. He is scarier.
Yeah, I mean, both of them. They're obviously, if I had to pick from that bunch, a president, and those are my only choices, that Republican field, those two would not be my first two. But that means they have a great shot, the Republican primary, if I don't like them. so, you know, somebody like Jeb Bush better look out, because out of that collection, he moves closer to the top, because I at least think he's sane and values education and things like that. But that's why he maybe have trouble in the Republican primary, because he's not hardcore on immigration. Sometimes he's had education solutions like granting scholarships to the people that finish at the top part of their school, be it public schools. You know, I mean, trying to value folks like that, not just saying, hey, we're only going to reward the folks at the private school.
You know what, though? Jeb Bush can sell himself in one way that Ted Cruz never could, and you know how that is? He can look in the camera and say, folks, I can win this race.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz can't win this race. And you know what? He'd be right there.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, I think he's right. I mean, he would be a more viable candidate. Will they vote on electability? Well, I'll tell you what, it's getting the last few minutes of the show, and we save the best candidate for last. We've talked about Jack Conway and Hillary Clinton and Al Gore and Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz and so many others, but we have not talked about the foot. If y'all have never heard of Serpent Foot, also known as Ann Otton, you hadn't followed Northwest Georgia politics. Ann Otwell was she was the Georgia Poet Laureate under Jimmy Carter as governor, wasn't she, Tim?
Something like that.
There's pictures of her with Jimmy Carter, something about like a Poet Laureate, I believe it was. Maybe she wrote a poem about that Maynard Jackson Muhammad Ali fight. That was around that time. you know, but I mean, she's this person that had risen in the normal, respectable, if you will, side of society. Then I guess in the 90s, it was in the 90s in which she really made her controversial image known. Is that right, Tim? When she changed her name from Ann Otwell to Serpentfoot.
Yes, let's say she exposed herself in ways that we had not seen before, David. Is that a charitable way to...
Well, we'll get into that. I mean, we can describe what happened. I mean, she,
yeah.
She disagreed with public prayer, and so when they would start praying at a commission meeting to start it off, she would take her clothes off, and they got to where they... I mean, she did it meeting after meeting, and they put her in jail every time for public nudity, and they would have overcoats just right behind her. As soon as she'd do it, these boys would almost, like, body hug her with this overcoat to cover her, because the county commission meetings were on, like, the local cable access channel, and it was like they had to show it, but they didn't want to show the nudity. It was just the most bizarre thing ever. And then she started running for office. And she put bumper stickers up, and there are still bumper stickers up, because I was talking to my wife when I saw this article. I guess it was Tuesday or Wednesday, the day that I sent it to y'all. And my daughter was like, she just didn't believe my wife and I that there was really a lady called Serpentfoot that ran for office. And so we were driving from where we had gone out to eat to the pet store to go buy something. And we went by a light pole. I said, there it is, Mercedes. Look right there. And it said Serpentfoot right up there. I said, see, we don't lie to you. There really was a Serpentfoot. She had bumper stickers. Well, she's made the news again this week. Not only did she make the Wrong News Tribune, and that's the article I sent y'all, she made the British news. I mean, the UK arm of Yahoo.com and many others quite picked up on this. She wants to change her name to a 39-word name. I'd start reading this thing, but I'm almost afraid we'd run out of show. Catherine, since you're not as familiar with Serpentfoot, you hadn't met her like I have, and I believe, Tim, you've met her too.
Yeah, I have.
Tell me, what did you think of this when you read this?
Oh, I just think it's so sad. When, you know, it's like, can't we be in the British paper for something, like, positive and optimistic and forward-thinking once in a while? Well, you know, I read these stories, I just think it's sad. Like, I feel sorry for someone like that. I suppose that's none of my business to feel that way, but I do. I just think there must be something, not something wrong with her, but something troubling her that would make her feel compelled to do this. But
this may surprise you. But Serpentfoot, when she ran in the 90s, was a Democrat. But in the early 2000s, Serpentfoot left the party. She said we were too liberal on one issue. And she told the chairman at the time, Gene Richardson, that she was going to file as a Republican. He did all he could to help her, I believe, because he just didn't get a guy. Catherine, can you guess what issue... she feels the party was too liberal on and left the party over.
Guns.
How did you know? Did you already? It was in the article.
I might have read another article, but it's a pretty easy guess.
Too liberal on gun control, and she left the party. So apparently she's packing, I guess. Maybe she doesn't pack.
That's a comforting thought.
Yeah,
but the question I have is, you know, she's a member of the Nudists, Natives, and Naturalists. That's her, like, religious belief. I don't know where she holsters the thing, then.
By the way, David, I did mention to you that I had one of the coveted books of matches, right?
Yes, tell us what that said again, because that's one of the great political slogans of all time.
She presented me one at the headquarters one dark, cloudy day, and it had a picture of her, and she was, I believe, in jail or going to jail a lot at that time, and said, even if she is in jail, she is still your most honest candidate. And you turn it over, and it said, and she will be out of jail in time to serve. I mean, that's just wonderful. I wouldn't take it. That's one of my most prized political possessions. I would not trade it for nothing.
You know what's sad? There's a guy in the Delaware legislature that's currently in jail. I mean, he actually needs to borrow that slogan. That's just how sad of a state of affairs that that happens more than we think, that folks run and or win, even though they're serving time. Well, look, last thing on this, 39 words, what's your favorite part of her new name, Catherine?
Let Tim go first. I got to look at it again.
Okay, Tim?
Yeah, I was looking for it to find it. I've laid the thing down, and here it is right here. Hang on. I was wondering why she went with trigrams. What in the world are trigrams? What in the world are those?
Tell me about those three-sided dominoes. I'm going to tell you on mine. I like the different variations of foot, but vacuum. Uh-huh. Where did vacuum come from? Catherine, what do you think now that you've seen it again?
I think I like the incorporation of the infinity symbol is my favorite.
Yes, which tells me that the computer needs to incorporate the infinity symbol on it because the printers at the Rome News Tribune couldn't even put it on there. I mean, because I guess there's no way to make it go sideways. Yeah. We need to add that on the keyboard typewriter, if you will. Well, folks, fun show. No guests. We're going to try to get somebody for next week. But I thought Catherine, Tim, and I need a little time just to talk to the people.
Well, thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first.